This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shamita Basu. Today, how Sharon Horgan writes women for TV that feel real. Earlier this year, a video of the actress Louisa Harland at an International Women's Day event was shared across the internet.
Dear men, I want to thank you all for taking care of things for so long. You've done a great job. Made some excellent art. Probably produced 95% of the movies and TV that influenced me as a young girl in need of influencing.
She was reading a 2016 letter written by the actress, writer, director, and producer Sharon Horgan, entitled Dear Men. Sharon wrote this at the launch of her production company, Merman, and in a very Sharon way, it points to the urgent need to change the lack of diversity in the film and TV industries.
Just think to yourselves, if you tell the same story over and over, then what do you learn? That 14 Spider-Man films in 5 years is a bad idea and yields diminishing box office numbers.
The letter speaks to what Sharon has been doing throughout her career, putting women's voices front and center, and writing her characters with brutal honesty and humor, without worrying that it might be too much for an audience. Whether that's in her Amazon series, Catastrophe, where she co-starred with comedian Rob Delaney, or her producing and writing on HBO's Divorce, starring Sarah Jessica Parker. Most recently, Sharon is the creator and a star of the show Bad Sisters on Apple TV+, a dark comedy about a group of five Irish sisters who plot to kill their detestable brother-in-law.
People get killed every day.
What's that mean?
I mean, why not give nature a helping hand? All our worries would be over.
Season 2 of Bad Sisters is out now. So I sat down with Sharon to talk about it. And a warning, there are a few season one spoilers that come up in our chat. I asked Sharon not just about the show, but her career and brand of humor and what has and hasn't changed for women in the industry since she wrote that Dear Men letter 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's kind of emotional, isn't it? It's almost emotional that it's still relevant. And the idea of, you know, what we had as youngsters to inspire us. And there was so little there. And it was such a surprise when you did see yourself reflected back at you. And sometimes the easiest thing is to choose someone who you're like, well, they've done it before 20 times, so let's go with that. And I think that's what the letter was about. It was like, the work will be better if you take that jump, you know, whether it's diverse voices or female voices or whatever, it's just like, take the jump and you'll be rewarded for that.
I mean, the other thing about this letter, and of course you, it's so you, in that it is so funny. It's dry and very, very funny. When did you first realize that you are a very, very funny person?
Oh, God. It's so weird, you know, because I kind of think I've kind of become less funny over the years. Not, you know, certainly in how I am. I'm so droll now. But when I was a kid, I was really funny because I was always vying for the attention of my parents. Like, I come from a family of five. And so I think it sort of started there. I just wanted to, you know, get attention in whatever way possible. And as it turns out, it was through doing stupid voices and making them laugh. And then again, at school, you know, just wanting to be the most popular girl's best friend. It was like, how do I do that? Just be the funny one, get myself in trouble, you know, with the nuns. And it was a real thing for me. Like, I really, really felt like it was almost, you know, class clown kind of thing.
At a Catholic school, it sounds like, no less. Tough crowd.
Yeah, very. But yeah, since I started working in comedy, and, you know, sort of getting to be funny on the page or on the screen, I kind of feel like less of a need to do it in real life. But, you know, it's still there. It's still in me. You know, I feel like any opportunity, I'm just cheap, really, when it comes down to it. I'll do anything for a cheap laugh.
Yeah. Well, so being funny on the page is really different than being funny in life.
It's completely different. In fact, it's completely different. And, you know, I feel like I need to champion comedy writers all the time, because it's even drama that has comedy in it is, I think, so much more difficult than straight up drama. You know, because you've got to do all the things that a drama does, but you also have to be funny and you have to be real, because that's how it happens in real life. You know, real life is never just straight up drama. And in order to sort of be truthful and believable, that I think that's where the comedy comes into it. So, and then you've got to make those funnies and those character moments feel very organic and not stand proud and not feel like written jokes. And so all of that takes a lot of skill and a lot of time.
At the heart of Bad Sisters is a family of five siblings. Sharon says the closeness of the sisters is what drew her to the project, which is actually an adaptation of a Belgian show called The Clan. It reminded her of her own family. She's also one of five kids.
You're an instant sort of party, but you're also an instant army, you know? And I'd sort of experienced all of that with my lot, and I felt that it would be infectious to capture that and put it on screen in the way that we do it in a big Irish family.
Season one centers around one of the sisters, Grace, who is in an abusive marriage to a character named John Paul.
He isolates her from her family and he controls her, you know, financially. And, you know, he undermines her confidence and he makes her feel like a nothing person. And the sisters think if they don't do something now, they're going to lose her, that she's slowly kind of disappearing.
In the first episode of season one, the sisters gather at a swimming cove in Dublin to talk about Grace and her husband.
We're losing her. She's not like the girl she was. She's getting quieter and smaller.
Can't grow in the shadow of the prick.
She was always quiet.
That's bollocks.
What's bollocks about it?
It's just not true, Becca. She wasn't always like that. He's sucking the life out of her.
Throughout the first season, the sisters conspire and bungle their attempts to literally kill their abusive brother-in-law. And while the premise is absurd and the show is funny at times, the way that abuse is portrayed, the quiet way it ripples through an entire family, feels very real, especially as each sister realizes the extent to which John Paul has been cruel to all of them. I asked Sharon what it's like to strike the balance between comedy and addressing a really serious issue.
With something like this, there's such a responsibility to people who find themselves in domestic violence situations or coercive control situations, because it's not funny and it's not a joke, but it's in a show that has, you know, a lot of silly stuff going on around it, like, and lots of caper and lots of laughs. But quite often what was on the page, we would sort of worry about. But I think the thing with having me there all the time is I always think, like, let's just try it. You know, let's do what's on the page and try it. And if it's not right, it comes out.
Just to praise the performances around this, so much of it comes out in how we watch the two characters who are in this marriage interact with each other. And I guess I just want to acknowledge, it feels like this is a portrayal of an abusive relationship that is not so much like explosively abusive, not even necessarily very physically abusive, but it gets into the nuances of what it can look like to be abused by your partner.
Yeah. You know, to the family, it's so clear and obvious because they see the sort of minutiae of it. Mm. But, you know, to the person on the street or, you know, a neighbor, or they would look at them and see, well, that's a beautiful couple who have a lovely home and a successful, an outwardly successful marriage. But lots and lots of women got in touch with us and said that it was the first time that they felt that their particular relationship was seen. You know, I think TV can be really powerful, can't it? And and comedy as well, because, you know, sometimes when it's talked about in documentary or really heavy drama, it gets a different audience. But when people see characters that they recognize and family situations that they recognize, then they kind of, they're more open to it. And it's felt like an enormous privilege to illustrate that kind of a story and shine a light on it. Mm.
You know, I was reading this interview that you did with New York Magazine, and I laughed out loud at one part where they asked you, have you ever wanted to kill someone? And you actually had an answer, and it was a very specific answer. I just thought it was very...
What was it?
I thought it was very funny. You'd mentioned it was like a roommate of yours was dating someone, and you just really disliked this person, and they just stuck around and were just persistently...
Oh, yes.
...an annoyance to you.
And yeah, he was a monster. He was a monster.
That was your answer. That was your I would kill that guy answer.
If that had been my relationship... I would have been Grace, you know, like I saw it at first hand and also experienced it in a way that was pretty rotten. So, yeah, I still think about him. It's good, though. You know, I feel like in a way that's a writer's job, isn't it? To like retain all those feelings in your muscle memory and stuff so that you can.
Yeah, yeah. You banked him for later.
Yeah, I did bank him. I'm so grateful.
Well, it just something about your response to that was so real and so honest. And it sort of felt like something you're not supposed to say out loud. Like, I'm still thinking about this guy and I would totally kill him if I could. And that, in a nutshell, is sort of one of the hallmarks of your comedy, is that you acknowledge the things that are sort of maybe shouldn't be said out loud, or people think shouldn't be said out loud, and are messy and are complicated.
Well, my daughter's... I think there's a lot of things I say that I shouldn't say out loud. I don't know what it is. It's pretty bad. And it's gotten worse over the years. You know, it's thinking aloud and then you realize you've said it. And then you think, oh, that must be an age thing. You know, where I've suddenly lost my inhibitors are just like just getting lower and lower.
I mean, you not only in Bad Sisters, but across so many different projects have portrayed so many women at different phases of their lives. And it does feel like a lot of it is being drawn from a very authentic well. How do you think about writing in these different ways?
Well, for the most part, I tend to use my life as a guidebook. You know, from when I started out with my sitcom Pulling, you know, I was writing about a stage in your life, you know, when you've kind of got very little and everything feels out of your grasp. You know, nothing's really kind of working out. That was the situation I was in, and I felt like I could give an authentic voice to it with Dennis Kelly.
In your 20s.
In my 20s. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was in my early 30s. And with Catastrophe, I was, you know, same deal. Had lived that situation. When I wrote Divorce, I hadn't been divorced at that point. But if you've been in a long-term marriage, you know what it feels like to want to be divorced, you know, and I would sort of find other people's stories, you know, I mean, people talk to me and I also listen really hard, you know, because I'm very interested in people's lives and obviously I'm always kind of looking for stories. But for the most part, what I do is in some way sort of fact-based. But, you know, I had this opportunity to do something that was very different, that was genre and, you know, a thriller and elements of murder mystery and all that. And for me, it was about rising to the challenge. I think you kind of have to do that if you're going to grow as a writer, because you can't stay in your own sort of safe lane, you know, or otherwise you just end up repeating yourself a little
bit. Making 14 Spider-Man films.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt like a massive challenge, and then I was really scared of it, and, you know, I'm still kind of scared of it, but I think that's a good thing to be. It's like that quote from David Bowie saying, you know, when you step into water and you feel yourself going just out of your depth where your feet don't touch the ground, you're in exactly the right place creatively to do something interesting, you know, when you don't feel like you're safe.
Just looking across all of your projects, each project feels so new, feels like there is something new to be explored and new to be mined in the human experience, and especially among women's experiences. Have you mapped out, like, decade by decade, a progression of projects for yourself? Is that sort of how you're seeing this?
Yeah.
It seems like
I kind of have. The menopause is my big thing at the moment, you know, because it is such a seminal thing. And yet, for the most part, it's not part of the sort of daily discussion like, well, you know, like fertility is, or any number of things. It's like we're just quietly sweating our tits off in the background. And
can I just say, without giving too much away, that in Bad Sisters season 2, which I want to talk about more, there is a menopause coach that makes an appearance. Is this Is this a real thing? Are there menopause coaches?
Yeah, there are.
Really? Oh, wow. That's so interesting. I had not heard of that before.
Look at me. I'm rubbing my chin because I can feel there's hairs on it. Actually, this is a massive name drop, but I was at Courtney Cox's a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And she caught me doing this, rubbing my chin. And she pulled my hand down and she goes, "You can't do that. You're in your 50s now. Everyone knows what you're doing.
Too funny.
Know you're pulling hairs out of your chin."
Oh, my gosh. Too funny.
Anyway, I stopped. Yeah.
You know, at some point you told The Guardian in an interview that this time in a woman's life is really interesting when you're in your 50s and a sort of madness descends and everything becomes heightened and intense. What do you mean by that? What is intense about your 50s? And what does that mean for you as an artist, as a maker, as a writer?
Like literally that. You know, it's the hardest time in anyone's lives because everything is changing. Because death comes into your life in a big way, but also your children leaving home, and then you find yourself either on your own or just with that one person that maybe you don't want to spend all that time with. And then on top of that, you know, the menopause comes along and suddenly you want to kill people and your emotions are flinging you around the place. You feel like you're going crazy. That's the heightened and intense bit. And you're having to cope with a huge amount of change and the hardest time in your life that you're just not prepared for. I mean, how could you be? Generally, you're not taught how to deal with this kind of thing in school or college. It just like comes into your life and you've got a free fall. And there's nothing not heightened and intense about it.
So tell me about season 2 of Bad Sisters. This is where your source material has run out, as I understand it, and now you're sort of left to freestyle a little bit more.
Yeah.
What can we expect to see in season 2?
Well, you know what? I was really initially unsure about doing it. And then I also was completely not expecting the response that the series got, you know? So I kind of had to give it a think. And in actual fact, even while we were shooting it, I started having some ideas about how a story might continue. But really, in the most basic way, it sort of deals with the fallout of what happened. You know, I think the idea that someone can go through something as traumatic as that, you know, to kill her husband and involve all her family in the cover-up and the lie, and for that not to, at some point down the line, come back to haunt her, you know. So that felt like something I really wanted to get into. And I can't really tell you too much, or I'm going to give it away, but there's things that happened within the first series that just gave us so much material where, you know, John Paul sort of continues to affect their lives because of choices he made, bad choices he made. So I love the idea of that. I love the idea that even from the grave, he's messing with their lives, you know? And then it was like to see the sisters further on in their lives and how it impacted on them, you know, because for me, it was really good fun watching them running around Ireland trying to kill this guy. But there always felt like there was collateral damage, you know, to them and the people it affected along the way. And they are, for the most part, pretty regular women who've had this terrible thing happen to them. And so it felt to me like there was plenty there to explore character-wise how they were impacted. And everyone kept telling me that people just wanted to spend more time with these girls. So, and so did I, by the way. Like, I really wanted to spend more time with them.
A new chapter.
Yeah.
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 Well, Sharon, this was really lovely. Thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
Sharon Horgan is the creator and star of Bad Sisters. Season 2 is out now on Apple TV+. We'll include a link for you on our show notes page.